gives voices and angles on the day's top news that don't get covered elsewhere. Not just the undercovered stories, but even the common stories have angles and have that aren't covered. There are people affected who aren't asked for their view.
No.
But KBOO does. And you rely on that. And guess what? KBOO relies on you. KBOO needs a decentralized base of funding. A little bit from each of the thousands of listeners. And you know, about somewhere between 9 and 11% of the people listening at any given time are contributing members. You know, we make something that you find worthwhile with just, you know, upwards of 11% of the people actually footing the bill. Think of how much we could do with 12, 15, dare I hope for 20. It starts with you, and it starts now. 877-500-5266. We're gonna move on to the next program, bring you even more of what we're asking you to support. So make that call right now.
When you live in a poor neighborhood, you're living in an area where you have to have poor schools. When you have poor schools, you have poor teachers. When you have poor teachers, you get a poor education. Poor education, you can only work on a poor paying job. And that poor paying job enables you to live again in a poor neighborhood. So it's a very vicious cycle.
On February 17th, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on the life and legacy of Malcolm X. Join us on February 17th from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. We will focus on the life and legacy of Malcolm X.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hello, thank you for tuning in to Labor Radio this evening. I am co-host Anne McDonald here with Fernando Gapison, leading the way this evening for radio by, of, and for the working class. Jump right in tonight. Last week, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers granted an easement to Dakota Access LLC to finish construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on federal lands managed by the Corps of Oahe, by the Corps of Engineers at the Oahe Reservoir. This came after an executive order from President Trump directing the Corps to move ahead with the project. Until December, Trump owned stock in Energy Transfer Partners, the company that was installing the pipe. In December, the Corps of Engineers was directed to do an environmental impact statement and was going to consider relocating the pipeline again. Originally, it was going to be built north of Bismarck, but after public complaints, it was decided to move it south, half a mile from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. It was moved because citizens of Bismarck were concerned about the safety of their drinking water. And so protesters have been camped out at Standing Rock for months now, since last April. BBC called it the largest gathering of Native Americans in over 100 years. The Corps of Engineers plans to shut down the area where water protectors remain on February 22nd due to concerns about flooding because the camps surround a floodplain. Theoretically, now construction can resume at any time. So this issue is at an interesting intersection of Native rights and sovereignty, U.S. energy policy, climate change, water protection, and reminder, 17 million people are downstream from this site, and organized labor. So to talk about that tonight, we're joined by Robin White, former president of Painters Local 10. He's on the e-board of the Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington Labor Councils and the Washington Native Caucus. Thanks for joining us, Robin.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
We've also got Michael B. He's from Carpenters 1503 and with the Anti-Fascist Workers Collective.
Good night.
And Tim Norgren from Labor's 737. So we got some labor folks here tonight to talk about an issue that's been big in the labor community and pretty controversial. So all y'all, what have your locals and international play, internationals, what part have they played for or against the pipeline and this project and projects like it? And a reminder, this executive order also allows for the Keystone XL to be built. You want to start us off, Michael?
Well, in the Carpenters Union, we have a volunteer organizing committee that's been largely put together by our staff. And as well-meaning as they are, they come to our local meetings and push for the LNG terminal, you know, off the coast and pipelines. And, you know, we kind of heard this, you know, song and dance, this story, you know, meeting after meeting. And some of us were working on housing affordability issues, and it became apparent that one of our members had bombed a homeless couple. And this really sort of drove home the point that we needed to do a better job of educating our members on the issue of human rights and social justice, and really kind of get back in front of a lot of the sentiments that people were expressing in our local, which is, you know, blaming immigrants or, you know, blaming really the victims of these economic policies. And so we decided to push a motion to donate our local number 1503 to the Standing Rock Sioux Defense Committee. We formed a group called Anti-Fascist Workers Collective to push this motion. We succeeded in passing this. Then we passed a motion to support the September 9th prison strike. And we really turned inward to our Constitution and the historic fight against racism. You know, because back in the 20s, the CIO and the Carpenters used to organize the South, and they would be bombed by the Klan. The Klan would disrupt our meetings. And so we actually have language in our Constitution, you know, opposing this sort of attacks and disruption.
So this is labor, not just, you know, enacting with the world through the labor working jobs perspective, but as a larger community entity, human rights entity.
Social movement unionism.
Beautiful.
So Robin White here. So the Painters and Allied Trades have not really publicly been out one way or the other, although our local here is working on a resolution in support. The building trades themselves have, the leadership, not necessarily all the members or all the locals, but the leadership came out with Teamsters, UA, plumbers, plumber pipe fitters, and a couple other ones, and laborers. And actually, we had the president of the laborers and basically Jimmy, the head of AFL-CIO, come out and say that it was that these protesters everything but terrorists, and also said that it was okay for people to get attacked by dogs and to be beaten at these things. And one of them actually said, "Well, you know, what are they having with their kids and women there anyway? Why would you take your children to Afghanistan? Last time I checked, this isn't Afghanistan. Last time I checked, this isn't a war zone. Last time I checked, these are the things that." That in our constitutions, in all of our union constitutions, and in the constitution of the AFL-CIO states that we're supposed to be helping the weakest in our society, that we're supposed to be lifting everybody up, that we're supposed to be lifting all workers up. This hasn't been done. You know, certainly I think this is exactly the opposite of what we're supposed to stand for, and I'm really, really actually ashamed for it. You know, for years we've known that this stuff is going on for over 40 years. We've known that we've been taking lead home to our kids and other poisons. We know that, you know, we know that there's been pollution. We know we have to get off of oil and coal. We've known this working in those fields. We were trying to build scrubbers and do the right things. And you know, we had people dropping dead in the streets from air pollution in Denver. We had the Cuyahoga River on fire. You know, certainly we were, a lot of our people were getting sick and getting cancer. We knew this stuff was going on. We knew that we had to do something. We did early on talk about taking our money, our pension monies, our retirement funds, and investing in these alternate sources so that we could get in on the ground floor, and so that we could, you know, be in the research and development aspects of it as being paid workers, and into the manufacturing and in the installation and the maintenance programs, and so that we could get in on the ground floor of these industries and have those being good paying wages with benefits and representation. Well, we didn't do that. We did some good things, don't get me wrong. You know, we did get some safety measures in, and we got stronger OSHA things. We did a few things, but really they were the easier things. They were the things that got us by and gave everybody excuse to look the other way. But it's time that we were responsible. These are, you know, human rights that we're talking about, whether it's the actual, the right to get out there and protest and do this, which, you know, I seem to remember being on a line with a lot of these people in the past decades fighting these issues, and we were complaining because we were getting picked on by the police and by the powers that be, and yet when somebody else or when natives do this, it's not allowed. I'm kind of ashamed of that, and I think we need to realize what we're doing. We need to put our money where our mouth is. We've got billions of dollars in retirement funds that we can do change with. That is a huge thing. That is something that is powerful. That is something that is responsible, that we need to do as human beings and as labor. That's our responsibility.
Yeah. You know, when you mention people complaining about water protectors who are taking their women and children to go out on the front lines there, I remember there were also children visiting Malheur, the wildlife refuge that was so infamously in the news, and that was happening about a year ago now.
Amazingly.
A very different response, it seemed, it came out of that. And this is just as valid in a lot of ways. You would almost think that some of those guys would even agree about, if we're going to sign treaties saying that the natives have sovereignty, then we need to be supporting that. If an injury to one is an injury to all.
Exactly. If you're not standing up against these things, any union, I don't care whether it's what union it is, whether it's AFL-CIO or whether it's any other union, if you're not standing up against this stuff, you're just as guilty. You're absolutely just as guilty.
Go ahead.
Tim Norgan here. Something I've been finding just on job sites, you know, I end up talking to people one-on-one a lot. It's just part of what we do is reaching out and canvassing, trying to organize something to make the change. I find that there are people in all the trades who, once they think about the situation and what's really going on, go, oh, well, of course I don't want to do that. Why would I want to destroy an entire culture or attack people with, you know, grenades that blow their arms apart, or, you know,
right,
this kind of violence? Why would I want the same police state that was used against us 100 years ago as unions? That's not what we are about here. And so this kind of attitude is coming out, you know, across the board. And yet when I go to a union meeting we're preached to, I think the first crack in the facade for me was to go to the training center, and they gave us out a letter that says, help us fight the Koch brothers and the right to work bills. And then next thing was, help us push for this Keystone. And I went, well, wait a minute, that's the Keystone is the Koch brothers project. Let me do some research. Come to find out, our leaders are meeting behind closed doors.
Now even in open doors.
No, like
right.
Secret meetings with members of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is kind of the Bribes for Bills Club that's working state legislatures across the country to push for things like the right to work bills, lower the minimum wage, things like pushing for more immigration stop and frisk laws to basically fill the prisons, because that's a big business. Basically any business that has some big money and wants to get in on this is able to write model legislation and hand it over to these folks. So these people are definitely out. They were behind Wisconsin and all the stuff that went on out there with Scott Walker. And as well as meeting with them, evidently our leaders were meeting with Americans for Prosperity, which is straight up the Koch brothers' front group, and the API pushing for the Keystone originally. I've watched as time after time things come up. We've got this thing in Coos Bay that people have been pushing for this LNG terminal. They want to export LNG, which we know causes, the fracking causes earthquakes all over the place. You know, it's poisoning water, obviously. It's doing a, been dumped into our crops in California here. So they're pushing this, and they don't want people to talk about it. So what they've done is they combined three well-established laborers locals into one and said, you don't have any voting rights anymore. You don't have any voice. And by the way, if you say something, even on your local's Facebook page, we're going to block you. You know, you are cut off. Then they pushed for an election. They favored Hillary during the election, although they took a survey, supposedly. There was no vote from the membership. This is true across the building trades, from what I understand. And they took a survey of a few members and said, well, we left out controversial issues like, you know, environmental issues, but we asked about the issues, and based on what we got, we decided that, well, you know, while we think good health care is a great idea, Hillary's just more realistic than Bernie, and so we're going to push her. Oh, and by the way, she's also got an all-of-the-above energy policy, which just basically tells you that that thing they left out is exactly what they decided to do. So you see this hypocrisy going on throughout.
Yeah.
And people are looking at it, and it's just a matter of talking to them. I'm excited about this anti-fascist collective that I see going on, because I was basically feeling like I was standing alone in the laborers. As much as people would agree with me, I never got people at the meetings standing up. And to see this bunch of people standing up is awesome. So
my hashtag is not all locals. I'm also a laborer, different local. Yeah. And when I heard Terry O'Sullivan talking about his so-called brothers and sisters, those environmental extremists, I've felt that I've gained a lot of power through my union. I've heard fellow laborers talk with pride about the wind and solar projects our union has backed and created. And I was kind of offended that suddenly I'm a so-called sister because I disagree about this point. And it did not do much for the sense of solidarity, but you know, every member can have a voice. They just got to show up and use it, right?
Right. You know, that's another point, that the laborers have also not fought for decent contracts for the renewable energy. But they have teeth on the oil contracts.
Really quick, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Ann McDonald here with Fernando Gapison, and we're talking with some fellow labor activists, Robin White, Michael B. and Tim Norgren.
In the book that I co-authored with Bill Fletcher, Solidarity Divided, we laid out one of the basic contradictions that exists in the American union movement. While unions are essential for American democracy, they have for the past 100 years, not been very good about issues such as racial justice. It was in 1998, over 100 years, when they reversed their anti-immigrant position and began then to defend immigrant rights. And here, given the history of the injustice against Native peoples, many unions are not taking the position of defending the rights of Native people. For instance, a basic white population essentially says that the pipeline is going to be harmful to them, and they divert it through Native lands. And the thing is that I think the folks that are here who are representing unions are the exception in terms of the union bureaucracies that run these organizations. And I think part of getting unions right is the fight for the democratic right for justice to prevail. And the kind of talk we're having now becomes really essential for the continuation, for the the fight for social justice, and essentially to help build the Democratic Union movement.
We see in Donald Trump's national security advisors meeting with fascist fronts across the world. We see them meeting with the leaders of white supremacist jokes, white supremacist movements. We see Donald Trump retweeting white supremacist groups' tweets during his own election campaign. We see him saying he favors national right to work. We see the leaders of the building trades standing beside him, and then the leader of my own union giving a speech praising him, okay? Praising him for welcoming us into the White House like never before, okay? Yeah. 4 days later, the GOP introduces national right to work legislation, okay? We are doing our best to try to inoculate our membership to the reality, which is that Donald Trump is going to betray us just as Mussolini did after he tried to bring in the unions under fascism. Okay, that's the reality that we face. Donald Trump is a charismatic, I hate to call him a leader, but the man is a charismatic. Okay, he's a TV show personality, and this guy is going to do everything he can to rope the building trades in under the guise of community benefit, project labor agreements on these highways. But while he's doing that, he's going to go after the immigrants. He's going to go after the blacks. He's going to go after.
So we have, we're supporting. We have our leadership supporting things that we don't want to support. We've got these deals where we're actually in bed with Citibank. Union Plus, for goodness sakes. These are the very companies that we're in bed with, that we're investing money in, that we're giving our money to. We're actually giving our money so that they can write legislation that writes us out of labor. I think that's extraordinarily in poor taste.
It's embarrassing.
We also, I want to jump something in here. It is about sovereignty there, too. It's about human rights, though. Water is a human right. And it's everybody's right, and we got to start thinking about that. The sovereignty issue that country was never given up. It was never ceded to the United States. It's just occupied. It was never given up. It's part of the treaty. Then it's also that area is a ceremonial ground and a burial ground. But what are we doing with our money? We're trying to do these pipelines so that we can continue to ship, and start shipping overseas. What about our infrastructure? What about all the pipelines that are busting to now and are killing people and are poisoning our water? Water is a finite resource. We are ruining it every day. It's cumulative. The water that's here today is somewhere else tomorrow. It's all being poisoned. We look at our on the Oregon coast, not being able to spawn oysters in areas because of the pollution in the water. Certainly where I come from, we're not able to harvest teepee poles because of the acid rain and the effects of that. What do you need? How many of these things do you need to see before you realize that water is finite and that particularly this one is in the largest aquifer in the country, in the biggest aquifer. And I'm not even talking about the lake and the river and the 17 million people below that. But why not take some of this money and fix some of those things, fix some roads, maybe put some money into the super fund, cleaning up the second most polluted place, which is right here on the Willamette River in Portland. That'd be a great idea. Thanks.
Yeah. Hey, building trades, laborers, the way I've been taught is we're here to do the dirty work. What needs doing, we're going to get out there. We're going to fix it. We're going to build it. You get put on a project. You don't get to pick what it is. One way to speak with your mouth, divest from Wells Fargo, as the city of Seattle just did. And that's also been encouraged in solidarity with prisoners who are kind of under captive labor. Because it's Pledge Week, we are quickly running out of time. Any last quick statements?
Labor should not be subservient to capital. We have the power when we stand together to dictate the terms of our working conditions and to actually say what work is going to look like. And we've been in this position where they tell us what jobs are going to be, how they're going to be, and what the conditions of that work is going to be. But when we stand together, we can say we want an affordable housing program. We want hospitals. We want school bonds. We want strong development that represents the values of our community rather than hurts them.
Yeah, be responsible. Let's look inward. Let's look at what we're doing. Let's take our money and invest it in the things that we need to be doing. And let's look at the seventh generation. You know, our grandkids, if we started today, it won't be cleaned up for them. We're killing them. We're killing those people. Every egg a woman has, she's born with every egg she's ever going to have. We know that these toxins are killing people, that they're changing the genetic makeup of those eggs. Think about that. We are killing our future generations. Be responsible.
You know,
be human.
You know, I'm in agreement.
Yeah, you said real quick.
Okay, microphone sounded funny. I'm in agreement with the sentiments. I plan to start buckling down and getting deeper into the work that I've been doing. But real quick, from the camp there, there's an ask coming from the Labor for Standing Rock camp, which was founded in October of both organized and non-organized labor. Crystal Tubles has basically asked that, in spite of the confusion, in spite of some of the people saying, you know, we don't want folks coming down, they really need people who are ready and self-sufficient and functional and prepared to deal with it, because the people on the front lines are getting beat up. This is a last stand. They don't intend to stop. And they're asking specifically for Labor for Standing Rock to send out people to that. There is a website that you can look up both Solidarity Actions and anything about coming down and that ask, which is nodapplesolidarity.org. That's all lowercase except for dapple, which is basically lowercase no, capital D-A-P-L, solidarity.org.
Thank you. Well, we just barely scratched the surface here, but we are out of time for Pledge Week. Thank you, Robin White, Michael B., and Tim Norgren for joining Fernando and I this evening. And thank you for listening to Labor Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Great, and we are back here at Pledge Central at KBOO. Our number here is 1-877-500-5266. My name is Emma, and I'm here with Karen. And we just want to talk with you for a couple of minutes about why you want to support KBOO. KBOO's news and talk programs emphasize the controversial and neglected perspectives on local, national, and international issues, as you can hear listening to the fabulous Labor Radio. So if you are somebody who cares about labor, if you're a member of a union, if you're somebody who is concerned about the future of this country, then we need you to call right now and support KBOO. Give us a call at 1-877-500-5266. Maybe you can only afford to give $10 a month, or maybe you can afford $20 a month. You know, a really good, one of the things I think about is maybe you could give an hour's wages per month. So, you know, whatever you make, like I work at a group home and I make $12 an hour. So if you could give $12 an hour, that would be great. If you make $30 an hour, maybe you could give $30 an hour. Whatever you can give to support KBOO, to support Labor Radio, and to support the important mission that KBOO provides in our community of giving you news and information that you're just not going to hear any place else, perspectives that you're not going to hear anywhere else. That's why KBOO really matters. So give us a call. Our number is 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. So what about you, Karen? Why do you think people should support KBOO?
Oh, my goodness. Did you hear the passion in the voices of Anne McDonald's guests tonight? That's that's all. That's KBOO. That's what we hear. This is why we need your support. Labor Radio is brought to you every Monday night. There are, well, if there's a fifth Monday, there's five different hosts that bring you different flavors of Labor Radio. There's the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. You just heard the second Mondays is Ann McDonald. You just heard a program by her, Stephanie Patricio on third Mondays. Fourth Mondays is Jamie Partridge, who brings you lots of information about the Postal Service and the union information. And the fifth Mondays are Michael Morrow and Lane Ponce. Just wonderful programming that you're not going to really hear
You're not going to hear it anywhere.
And these are information, this is information that is local and important to your daily life. And as you heard them speaking tonight, they were connecting the local activities with national and global issues. So call right now. We need you to support.
877-500-5266.
Yes, please keep us dependent. Keep Labor Radio on the air. We love our grassroots supporters. We would love you to call right now, 877-500-5266.
And again, if you can, you know, if you can give $10 a month, that's a pretty normal amount for people to give. If you can only make a one-time pledge, then do that. You know, maybe give $25.
Yeah.
But if you can afford to give once a month through electronic debit, that's really the best way to give to KBOO. It's easy. It just comes out of your bank account every month. You don't have to think about it. You know that you're helping out KBOO and you're helping the community. And if you just give us a call right now, we have some great people down here who will help you make that pledge.
And they can go to kboo.fm and click on the tip jar or give and make your donation that way too.
Great.
Or